time for the Anything Goes Hour with Stu Breyer.
Thanks for staying with us, WICH. As I promised you, we have a very interesting guest this hour and a subject that I think will get everybody's attention. Dr. Dorina Rode is with us. She is a behavioral therapist, psychology. She is quite a speaker, too. And she does a lot of talks on getting unstuck, which we'll find out about. Hello there. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, Stu. Good to be here.
Nice to have you on a program. This is very interesting. When I read the headline about yoga and meditation, we automatically think, boy, that's a relaxing and a wonderful thing for us. But your theory is that sometimes when we get very relaxed, that some of the little demons sneak up and get into our heads. Is that what you're thinking?
Kind of like that. Actually, it's not so much the relaxation as the fact that we're actually connecting with our body in a focused way, typically. So when that happens, a lot of time unresolved trauma can arise.
So unresolved trauma is something we generally sometimes bury for a lifetime, and this is kind of letting it out a little bit.
Yes.
So you find that people all of a sudden go, whoa, and can't handle that.
Well, and sometimes they're not even aware it's arising. So what happens is that people can be going through their life just fine, and they might have some of the signs of unresolved trauma, which are dissatisfaction with their work and their life, maybe a little bit dissociation or tendency to space out, or they might have cravings and addictions that they can't, they don't really understand. They're always like craving extra food or something. But then when they actually start to kind of slow down and actually get more into their body, that stuff can increase. All this stuff that they thought was just kind of low level will actually get worse and create stress in their life.
So what you're saying, many of the things that we learn at an early age come out in various ways as we get older, and some of them are pretty negative. 54%, it says here, of the U.S. population report childhood trauma. That's quite a percentage.
It is. It's really high. In the late 90s, in a joint research study with the Centers for Disease Control and Kaiser, they went through to survey over 17,000 adults about their childhood experiences. And what they found was that 54, 52, it's been reported a lot. Other health services have repeated the study. But it's high levels of people report at least one instance of some sort of adverse childhood experience. And, you know, sexual abuse with women or girls is one in four. And so there's very high levels that we don't even, you know, if you look around the room at any time and you see like 10 women in the room, you don't think, wow, two or three of those women have been sexually molested as a child. You know, it's kind of unfathomable.
And many of us bury it in our subconscious, and it comes out different ways?
Exactly. A lot of times the molestation could be when we bury it, because as a child it's just so terrifying, like any kind of war trauma. We basically suppress that, and it's buried down there, and we might not even have any clue of it. It might have happened to us when we were 3 years old, or, you know, very easy to forget as well.
Dorina, they say that children don't remember anything before three. Do you think that's true?
I don't think that's true. People have different abilities to remember things. And we have, everything is kind of recorded in our subconscious, so there is an ability to access that material. So I haven't heard that, but, you know, obviously people tend to, there's people that have been abused that don't remember anything before they were eight, even. So.
Yeah, I understand. Yoga, people love yoga and they love meditation, but you have to know what you're getting into before you start that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so before you start with yoga or meditation, you should be aware that it does bring stuff up. And I started doing yoga and meditation when I was in my late 20s, which was 30 years ago. And I was told it would bring stuff up, but I didn't know what that was. What do they mean, stuff? I don't have any stuff. And what people aren't aware of is that it can create a little bit more stress as you, it can make you uncomfortable. So the whole long-term yoga and meditation are designed to relieve stress and make you more integrated and a happier person. But short-term, it can bring up whatever it is that you're not conscious of right away. So it can make you more uncomfortable. It can also, in extreme, bring up dramatic changes. Like you can have a flashback. So that stuff that's coming out of the subconscious can be triggered, and you can flash back to when the trauma occurred.
Some people, I know, go into hypnosis to try to find out what it was that's leading them to be anxious in this adult life and this or that. And that can be dangerous, too, if it's with the wrong person, I would think.
What do you think the danger would be?
Well, certainly there has to be a qualified person when these things come out. And it can be pretty frightening, can't it? The qualified person to be like yourself, you do a lot of talks on this stuff.
Yeah, not all therapists are prepared to deal with someone who's actually accessing that trauma. And the same thing with yoga teachers. You know, they get a, you know, you can get certified to teach yoga in a 2-week course, and you're certainly not qualified from that training to deal with someone in class who's all of a sudden having a flashback or having a dramatic shift in their emotions because something is arising.
So for the most part, is it good to eventually get this stuff out and then you can dissect it and work on it and have a better rest of your life?
Yes, yes, and that's my story. I was actually depressed and anxious for the majority of my adult life, and I was always looking for ways to de-stress and feel better. And I started doing yoga, tai chi, meditation long time ago. And they did not make me feel comfortable, but I wasn't aware until my late 40s that I had repressed memories. So it took me many years to get to a place where I actually had the foundation to be able to recover and handle the memories of my childhood, which turned out to be fairly severe abuse.
All right,
and,
very interesting.
And then over the period of 3 years, I actually remembered most of the big issues, I guess, and cleared them, and then I no longer have any depression or anxiety.
Well, good. I want you to give us some tips on how to deal with that, but let's take a call here. Hi, WICH.
Hi, doctor. You're right about the yoga. Some years ago, I started taking yoga classes, and I stopped them because after each one, I felt sick. Years later, I took the Tai Chi, and I had no problem with it. Is this common or what? Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, it can be very common. So what I think happens with a lot of people who they try these different modalities and they never come back because no one really explains that it's actually part of the process. Tai Chi tends to be a little bit more gentle than the yoga in terms of bringing up, you know, it's a little bit more strenuous, you're more in your body, so you can maybe be bringing stuff up faster. And it might not become conscious. You might not even be aware that you're clearing resolved trauma using these methods.
Well, that's because this is what you do. You talk to people, you're a speaker, and obviously you talk about how to let the baggage go and the best way to do it. And how did it work with you?
So with me, just my personal story?
Yes.
Is that I was actually, things came up and I finally started having the memories. And when those occurred, I actually started looking at how can I get them resolved. And I was working with people that had training in hypnotherapy and they had training in alternative medicine modalities for identifying these things and be able to rule them out or pull them out very quickly. And so the process was to ask, for me, it was asking questions because it was pretty deep down in there. And so usually we like, oh, I don't really want to go in there. But I would ask things, you know, is this a memory that's coming up? You know, is this something that happened to me? And I'd get a sense. You know, I had developed my awareness enough so that I would get a sense, okay, this is something from my past. And I would ask, who does it involve? I had severe abuse which centered around, I was in a ritual abuse family, which means that there was multiple people that abused me. So I would ask, you know, I try to get the memory, so I'd ask, who does it involve? Is it like the grandfather or the grandmother or, you know, the uncle? And then I'd ask how old I am. So I would just keep asking questions, you know, where am I? What is required? And a lot of the work I did before that was working on establishing a foundation of safety. Because in order to be able to remember these things, I have to know that I'm safe. So if you're working with a practitioner, and I did at that time, I did work on my own and I did work with someone, they need to be able to hold a safe container for you to be able to remember this stuff. And it's really, you know, when it was first coming up, I think for me, it was unbelievable. Most of the stuff was unbelievable. And that's another thing. I don't take the memories because, you know, they say memories can be distorted. They can be weird. But the truth is it doesn't really matter if it's an accurate memory. It matters if you're acknowledging it and releasing it. Because the idea is not to come up with this story you can hang on to, but with something that you can let go of so that you can become free of depression, anxiety, or anything that's limiting you.
So your feeling is that you're better off getting it out, dealing with it, as opposed to some people who don't deal with it, then isn't that a possibility that you could get more depressed when you've realized what went down in your life or not?
I found it very freeing, actually, because I was already depressed for decades before I had any memories. So for me, the act of finally, oh, there's a reason for this. Mm-hmm. I'm just not biochemically, you know, insane, and I can't control this thing. And actually, after getting free of it all, I'm totally, this is something we can just get free of. I actually didn't realize that I would become free of depression once I cleared all those memories, and that's what happened.
Well, years of depression, and that's not an easy thing you have to deal with, so you must have had some really bad years.
Yeah.
I know a lot about.
My world's pretty small.
I know a lot about depression, and you know, I've done a lot of shows on it. So I'm glad that you were able to do that. So primarily, would you say hypnosis was the best way to find out?
Well, I use a change facilitation process. So for me, it's kind of in a hypnotic state, basically, and I'm writing a new book, you know, Would You Like to Change That, which goes over the actual process of getting into a state of mind, you know, which is like hypnosis, but I don't call it hypnosis, that's such that you can kind of access the subconscious easier. And then from that place, I mean, basically, if your listeners are interested, I mean, it's basically if you get in a quiet place, if you can get into a quiet place and kind of let yourself relax and be open and then focus in on certain questions, you know, and you have the answers within you. And what happens is we tend to pretend that they're not there or we deny them. I mean, who wants to know that their father molested them? I mean, it's just not something we want to know. And sometimes we're so scared about it, we don't realize that it might not be as big as we think it is, but it's big to us, or it's big to the child that it happened to. And that's the other thing. People can have really severe abuse, but just as damaging is just one time when someone you care about, and you're 3 or you're 2 or you're 5, they say something like you're worth nothing. That can totally devastate you, and it can keep you locked for a long, you know, for your whole life.
No, that's a point. It doesn't have to be as serious as you say the molestation or what have you, the abuse, but those words can just carry on through your whole life. So that's
important.
Yeah,
and at
important.
A subconscious level.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you give talks, you sit around with people and you try to, do they come up with things that they hadn't talked about in years, saying, gee, maybe I'm so afraid of the water because when I was little, I you know, had this situation, or is that how it works?
It's a little bit like that. Yeah, it's basically, okay, I ask people to kind of free associate. So if I'm working with someone, and they've got an issue like that, I would ask, you know, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen to you in the water? And people, you know, depending on the person, they're going to have a completely... Somebody might have the, you know, well, I'm going to get pulled down, and I'm not going to be able to get out. And then if you keep going, the subconscious includes a lot of irrational things. So sometimes, you know, I don't know where this stuff comes from, but I've worked with a woman before, and she was like, you know, I'm going to get pulled down. And what's the worst thing if you get pulled down? Well, my family will not survive without me. And, you know, and she went into a whole this thing, but she hadn't even didn't even have a family.
So
she had this fear, and I don't know where she picked it up from. You know, that some people say there's past lives, so it could be a past life experience. But, you know, I don't know. It doesn't matter to me because it's in the subconscious, which is really irrational. She might have been 3 years old, and she was watching a TV program, and the person drowned, and their family was devastated, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And she might have picked it up from that, or she could have picked it up from a past life. I don't know. But the thing is, it was cemented in her subconscious, so she's got this fear of the water because she knows bad things will happen with the water.
How much does our subconscious, when we're young, these thoughts get into our heads, turn into be phobias and obsessive-compulsive disorders? They usually come from situations when you're young, or is it genetic or what?
It's probably a combination of all that. I mean, the truth is people say we only use 10% of our mind, and that's not true. We use 100% of our mind at all times, and the bad news is that 90% of that is subconscious. So we're and irrational, because it's where the phobias and stuff live. And so what's driving most of our life is this subconscious part. And anybody who's tried to stay on a diet or tried to make a change that they wanted to change consciously and couldn't understands that there's something else that's really in control.
So are there ways to tell your subconscious to go to hell, or there's other ways of doing it?
Well, the first step is to find out what your subconscious believes, right? And that requires a little bit of playing, like I said, because it's not going to be the first thing that pops into your mind is usually what the subconscious is thinking, and it might be something that's completely crazy or that you don't want to believe. You know, it's like, I can't be scared of water because my family's going to get hurt because I don't have a family yet. I'm 20, you know? I don't have kids.
So basically, one part of our brain is having a debate with another part.
Yeah, and that's what gets in the way to begin with. So the first step is to kind of like get into a place where you're just going to be, I mean, if you can understand that it's not you that's in control, it's not that conscious part, it's the subconscious part, then you can start playing with it. It's like, okay, let's pretend like we have a family and it's, you know, it's going to get in trouble if we drown or something like that, you know, and you start, you let it go a little bit and just allow that to create a space. Like if you're thinking about, you know, I think my father molested me, it's like, okay, let's pretend that he did. I mean, it might be true, might not be true, doesn't matter, but how will it change things? And that's what I found, is that when I could get to a place where I was willing to accept the different things and not make such a big deal about them, I mean, they are a big deal, but on the other hand, it's a bigger deal to keep them repressed. It takes a lot of energy, and you get that energy back when you start being able to, like, okay, maybe this happened, and it doesn't mean my whole world has to change. And maybe my Christmas plans don't have to change, but, you know, my family's just changed. And it is a big change. Sometimes people do have to cut off connections with their immediate family to be able to do the work because it's so disturbing, because it's changing the whole worldview for them. It's like, whoa, I used to have parents that were like this, and now I see this was my childhood.
Romina, you're an award-winning speaker, it says here, author and a life coach. Is this what you do during your day? With people constantly?
Yes, I work with people. I help them get unstuck, basically, and I use alternative medicine modalities with people. They come in, and we look for the different beliefs. It's more of a change facilitation, and just pull them, and people change immediately. And it's amazing. Someone can be sitting there, and they can be crying about something. And we change the belief that's creating that upset, and they feel better instantly. And they're like, "What? Why was I crying? What was I crying about?"
I need for you to give me an example of this. So first of all, the people that come to you have to know that there's something gnawing at them to come to you in the beginning, right?
Right.
Okay. So
people usually want to change a relationship. They want to change their money. They're not making as much money as they want. They've got something clearly that's a problem in their life.
And you think this may be in their subconscious from earlier years?
I think anything that's a problem in our life is actually caused by subconscious beliefs in that. Whether they're early years, you know, I don't where they come from, I don't know. I don't understand the. I don't think anybody understands the mind.
So give me one example of how you can turn somebody around quickly, because you know you're talking about you've had depression for so many years and people have been holding this in for so long. So you're telling me if you with the right words and the right feelings that in minutes somebody can say, boom, I understand now?
Yes. So depression, like it took me decades or years, right, to work with because there was layers and layers of what I had gone through. But in a situation, the one that pops into my mind that's the most dramatic is I was working with a woman who was she was a professor. She taught teachers, people that were going to go into the elementary school. So she was teaching the people that would then go on to teach kids. And she taught usually in a way that she ended up with a cohort of people that for 2 years. And that group of people would take one kind of class from her, and then the next semester they'd take another class, and on and on. And she had a cohort that they hated her. They were rude in class. They gave her pushback. They kind of snickered in the back. They said bad things about her to other people. And so she came to me and said, I want to change that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, let's look at what beliefs are holding that in place. And so from my point of view, what I'm using is that everything that we see in our world and in ourselves is caused by some sort of belief. It's kind of like the power of attraction. What's attracting this to us somehow is in our subconscious. So we went in and we worked on her beliefs such as I'm a good teacher. So she had some belief. I mean, she knew she was a good teacher, but somewhere subconsciously she was testing, and I use energy testing to check if a belief is actually being held by the subconscious. She was testing that she did have the belief that she wasn't a good teacher. So we changed that. We changed a couple other ones. So she goes back to school, and everything's changed. She said she couldn't believe it. I mean, I couldn't believe it either. That's what's such a good story, is that the students were no longer pushing back. She got reports from one of her co-teachers or professors that the students said that she was their favorite teacher. She also got a comment from the department chair. They were giving good reports back to that, the department as well. And everything changed. And that's the, you know, we don't believe in this society that the outside world really comes from us, that somehow our subconscious beliefs influence it. But for some reason, when we changed those beliefs, she was able to go back and not have this issue with these students anymore.
So that's why some of the things that are said to us in a negative way that we take seriously, she would carry it on maybe in her situation, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough, and there's a part of you that says, no, I am good enough, but that takes over. And then when your whole attitude changes, everything changes with the people that you're around.
Right.
Have I got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Tell me what I just said, because I'm not sure.
You got it.
I got it. Okay.
And well, it's interesting. So if you look at just that belief, I'm not good enough. If someone in your childhood, someone who's important, right, a parent or something, says, hey, you know, you're not going to amount to anything, people can take that three or four different ways, right? They can. If someone tells you you're not going to amount to anything, you can overachieve. You can take that belief on, and you can then overachieve so that you're always trying to prove them right. So people come to me because they can't seem to relax. They're always trying to prove that belief is wrong, that they won't amount to anything. Other people take the belief on and they don't amount to anything. So they're the underachievers. You remove that belief and then they can amount to something. And then there's other people that hear that belief as a child and they say, that's my mom and my dad. They don't know. They just don't believe it. So they don't have any issue with that one. So,
well, you're very interesting. I hope you're really helping lots of people because, you know, you got one life, probably, and you want to have happy days and feel good about yourself and get rid of some of the mud that you're carrying. So how can we get more information about what you do?
Well, you can go to my website, dorinaroad.com, and you can get information there. I also have a download. So if you want my 7 tips to defeat depression, you can find that there.
You go to the the website?
Right on the homepage, there's a little link. Yeah, there's a little link, and you can just download the 7 tips for defeating depression. I also have a download for changing your money reality. I use these methods to get change enough beliefs to just completely retire when I was 30. So
I don't want to let you get away without a couple of tips to defeat depression. Give us a couple.
So the biggest thing I have is people come to conclusions. So when you're depressed and you're anxious, you come to the conclusion that it's never going to change. And so you either fight against the depression or you crawl into a ball and say it's never going to, you know, so you're doing two different things. So the key thing is to stay open and curious and ask the question, what would it take to change this? And state, you know, I'm going to choose to change this. So the other things too, you know, so that's an important key thing is to open yourself to possibilities of change. And things will actually start coming to you. That's that power of attraction thing. The other thing is movement. So even though we're talking yoga and qigong and tai chi, kind of bringing things up, long term, they're going to clear this stuff out. And it's really important. And if you don't have to do those things in particular, just any kind of movement. When you're depressed, I know the last thing you want to do is move. But if you can even get up out of bed and walk outside and around the house, it's going to change things. So those are two, and there's five more you can go explore.
All right. Very nice talking with you. Keep up the good work, and I hope you can help lots of folks, and I'm glad you're doing better.
Thank you, Stu.
All right, Dorina. Thanks for being with us. Stu Breyer with you at WICH. We'll take a break.